You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello and welcome to the Royal Blue Podcast. My name is Ian Kroll. I'm your host for today's Tuesday Royal Blue, and I'm joined by the Echo's Everton FC correspondent, home and away, Joe Thomas. Joe, we are back again. How are things?
Yeah, not too bad. Cheers, Ian. Plenty to talk about, haven't we, as ever? Who thought this was going to be a quiet 3 weeks without a game, eh?
Absolutely, yeah. We're also joined by Everton statistician and Royal Blue contributor, Gav Buckland. Gav, how are things? Did you listen to yesterday's podcast?
I did.
Hey, Joe, throwing a few F-bombs around.
Ah, that's understandable, really, to be fair. I mean, probably not the only Everton supporters saying dropping F-bombs yesterday, dare I say, but yeah, it was interesting. We said a couple of weeks ago in the pod that it was 3 weeks out of any football, it was going to be three weeks full of news stories, and that's exactly how it's transpired, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on, Gav. I know you're a busy man, so it's much appreciated. But we obviously got plenty to speak about after yesterday's Nottingham Forest news. So we are live. Just a reminder to like, subscribe, send in your questions, submit your opinions, and Gav and Joe, I'm sure, will do their best to answer them if I can eloquently read them out. So there is only one thing on the agenda today, and that is the news that Everton's relegation rivals, Nottingham Forest, have been hit with a 4-point deduction. 6 less than Everton's original punishment and 2 less than Everton's appeal decision. Joe, I'm going to go straight into it, and I want to give your piece a big, massive push, to be honest, because it's well worth a read on the Liverpool Echo website. So if you haven't read it already, please go to the Liverpool Echo website and give it a read. So just a couple of lines from it. Quote, "This farcical Premier League season has plummeted to new depths of absurdity, exposed in a single paragraph deep into the explanation of the 4-point deduction handed to Nottingham Forest. 3 legal experts appointed to provide confidence in a competition undermined by asterisks looked at the precedent set by Everton, and admitted that not only could they not work out how the punishment handed to the Blues had been calculated, but that no explanation had been made available to them." Fantastic piece, Joe. Really good read. Just, you know, your initial reaction, and obviously you want to talk about your piece as well.
Yeah, I think my piece kind of sums up my main thought process on this at the minute, where we'll get into the nitty gritty of the breach, the numbers, the mitigating factors that Forest put forward. But really, my interest is almost from taking a step back away from that and just looking at the process as a whole. And I think really what this latest judgment has exposed yet again is the fact that there is just no clarity over how this system is operated. And because there's no clarity, there's no consistency. And because there's no consistency, it's very difficult to argue that there's fairness that's being applied. I was surprised when it emerged that Forest had got 4 points, but I didn't know the numbers behind it. I didn't know the reasons behind it. We knew some of it would be Brennan Johnson related and the timing of that departure. But in terms of the fine print, didn't have any idea of it, but I was a bit surprised. I think that there are some merits to some of Forrest's arguments. Part of me wants to come on here and say, I don't really understand how Forrest got 4 and haven't got 6 and things like that. I mean, part of, and I mentioned it in this piece, in some respects, I actually think Forrest are hard done by in some elements of this. But really, the wider perspective that I'm coming to is just the fact that the whole system is a farce. You know, Everton's case is drawn on heavily in this judgment, but it's clear that this third panel of experts that are being chosen to kind of rule on these Premier League rules are coming to slightly different conclusions and interpretations than the two that have gone before them. You know, we're in a system whereby, just put Forrest to one side, the first panel that ruled on Evans' case thought 10 points was justified. The second panel, the appeal panel, that ruled on Everton's case for the 6 points was justified. The panel that are ruling on Forrest's case and looking to the Everton case for precedent and for some guidance are basically looking at it and saying, well, we can see where you got 3 of the 6 points from, but we're not really sure where the other 3 came from. We got an idea, but we're not really sure. And at this stage in proceedings, that just seemed absolutely absurd. Look, the Premier League, what they will say is the fact that there is no formula for these punishments because the Premier League clubs didn't want one, and that's fair. The Premier League club voted not to have a table whereby this is how you work things out.
Yeah.
And at the start of this process, that's going to lead to uncertainty. Everton, you know, were in the unhappy position which they put themselves into. Don't want to get away from that, but they put themselves in that where they became the precedent that was set. But what I think we would hope would be achieved would be is, whilst the first one there might be a lot of uncertainty, as you kind of get deeper and deeper into this process, a narrative thread would start to emerge where the experts that are supposed to rule on these cases would start to kind of almost draw up some guidelines, some of their own parameters from which they're operating in. And to a certain extent, that has happened. But really, this case has shown that isn't really happening to a good enough extent, to a consistent extent. And that just exposes how flawed the system is, because the reality is it's an absolute lottery as to how each case is going to be judged. And that's even kind of acknowledged within this own judgment itself. You know, they come to their own decisions, which they say are partly based on what's gone on before them. But they say that future commissions wouldn't be confined to their judgments. So all what you have is you have a panel every time this is going to come along that have essentially got no guidance on how to operate. And how does that lead to consistency? How does that lead to fairness? How will that lead to fairness in Everton's next case? And when the outcomes of these processes are so severe for football clubs. Yeah, how does that lead to protecting the integrity of the competitions, which apparently these rules are supposed to be doing?
I mean, Gav, you in past podcasts, you've maybe suggested that you were happy that there wasn't a formula. So with that, it obviously does throw a little bit of inconsistency, but at the end of the day, looking at it, is like Everton's transgression has been hit with a bigger punishment.
Yeah,
even though the percentage wise was lower than Forrest's.
Yeah.
So is that fair? It's obviously not fair, but in terms of the actual formula itself, I just want you just have you changed your mind about the formula?
No, I don't like the idea of a formula. Yeah. I agree with what the panel suggested, that you know you've got to look at like the circumstances of it. I don't like the idea of somebody at the start of the season looking at a spreadsheet saying, "Well, two or three years down line, we've overspent by this. We will have, you know, a fine of 6 points." Oh, by the way, what to suggest that if you cooperate, you can lob 2 points off straight away, can't you, really? You know, to a great extent, and say, well, I'll tell you what, we'll take £100 million overspend risk to get them 4 points, because that's all we'll get. I don't like the idea of that at all. And I'm sure there's clubs looking at the punishment, you know, there'll be clubs looking at the punishment handed out to Nottingham Forest. Or not Forest, whatever, and Everton thinking that. Exactly. Because is it Forest, you know, Forest have overspent by whatever it was, 34 million against their threshold, only got 4 points at the end of it. You think of all that transfer splurge. Other clubs may look at that in the future. I know the rules will change, but the principles stay the same. Think, well, I'll tell you what, we'll take that gamble. If it keeps in the Premier League for a few years and we get that extra money, we'll take that. So that's why I don't like the idea of it, of that. At the same time, you do have to have some sort of guidance. The main take I took from yesterday was the Premier League, really. Well, one of the takes was an Evans original submission commission. They wanted, 10 to 12 points for a £19 million overspend against the limit. Yesterday, they said that 8 points for a £34 million. I'm thinking about what the parliamentary... You know, commission said, you know, you don't know what you're doing. I'm thinking, if you look at the logic, those two Premier League arguments, and if the initial commissions in Everton and Nottingham Forest, that's the real inconsistency, isn't it? Where does that come from? Because ultimately that did, I'm fairly certain, as we know, that probably led to some of the initial thinking behind the original commission's decision. Yesterday, they didn't really take much notice of that. But that they are the governing body, and to have such two differing views in such a short space of time over, you know, essentially the same thing, I find, you know, supports that judgment that you don't know what you're doing, certainly on this issue, and that's what I'd flag up. Regarding the points discussed, on face value, yeah, it looks like Everton are being hard done by, but when you get into the nitty-gritty, there are two similar cases in that. I do, you know, 2 points have been, Forest have got 2 points dropped because of their cooperation. The way I looked at it is, after bear with me on this one, is they both got 3 points for just substantially over, you know, going yeah. over the threshold, 3 points.
But that's meant to be the starting
point
now, isn't it?
Starting point, 3 points, okay. So then, what the first commission found, I think they've added another 2 points on because of the scale of it, and then 1 point for the, you know, misleading information. The second commission have said 3 points for just going over by substantial amounts. So, but rather than give 2 points for your scale, Forrest, we're going to give you 3 points because you've done more than Everton. And that takes you to the 6 points. So I think the Forrest have been punished more than Everton because of the scale of their, you know, how much they've exceeded the target. But Evans is the same because we've got 1 point for the misleading information. And that was what they were trying to tease out from. They couldn't establish in that paragraph. And this was the fault of the appeal board. The appeal board took it into account but didn't say whether it was a point or 2 points. They just didn't know. So on face value, although it looks as though Everton have been hard done by, when you look at it logic from that perspective, you can see the similarities. At the same time, I think that, you know, the commission yesterday, they said they didn't really matter whether it was thought 34 million or 19 million over. Well, I'd argue that actually is that a right way of looking at things. But you can see the similarities of the judgments and why ultimately Forrest have got four and we've got six. Doesn't necessarily mean it's right though. I think what's not worked against us in this whole matter is that we were the guinea pig, weren't we? Mm-hmm. You know, would Forrest have behaved like they did with the Premier League if they'd not seen Everton's case?
Well, I think it's pretty much written into the judgment that they wouldn't
have done.
It's clear that Forrest acted and chose to act in a certain way because of the way Everton's case unfolded. They they put forward six cases, six strands of mitigation, and one of them was that they cooperated fully by admitting the breach early on, and the second one was that they acted differently, essentially that they acted differently to Everton.
Yeah.
As in cooperation.
Yeah.
So just looking at me now, say, didn't Everton appeal that cooperation should be treated as a mitigating factor? And then they were told, well, no, because you should just cooperate anyway.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Royal Blue Podcast.
Well, basically, in the Everton case, it was established that the starting point should be that clubs cooperate with the Premier League and with the commission.
Yeah.
Now, where Forest have benefited from is that whereas you don't get any benefit for just normal cooperation, it seems to be now that if you cooperate exceptionally, then you actually get... you know, then you actually get that rewarded by getting points taken off the ultimate punishment. So standard cooperation is expected. Exceptional cooperation leads to a benefit.
So what is exceptional cooperation?
Well, they list that in they actually put that down in writing, examples of that in this case. And, you know, basically it's anything that makes the processes smoother and easier and cheaper for the Premier League. So if you admit everything in full at an early stage, so all of a sudden you become less about arguing whether you're guilty or not and more about, well, you know, how guilty are you? Then at that point, you know, you're open to a more lenient sentence. Everton, obviously, in their first case, disputed quite a lot of the figures and the calculations and the interpretations of the rules. Now, I mean, in some respects, you could argue that Everton are therefore being punished for just, you know, putting up their own defence, which they've got every right to do. Yeah. It's a difficult one because I think that, I mean, it's not necessarily a great analogy, but it's not dissimilar to being in the court system. Like, if you give a guilty plea at the earliest opportunity, then you're entitled to the reduction of your sentence by a third. So it's the same, similar kind of precedent in this case. Yeah. You know, Forrest have just gone, you know what, Gov, yeah, we breached. We're not going to argue with that on that. Can we just have a conversation about why we've breached and what are mitigating factors? So there is kind of like a legal precedent from that. But yeah, just going back to this idea of formulas and things like that, I just think that across the three cases that we've now heard, it's clear that there are differing interpretations of rules, yeah, what constitutes the degree of a breach, and as a result of that, I understand what you're saying, Gav, about there's a potential for clubs, if they have a set formula, to try and effectively outrun it. You know, well, we can spend and we'll know what the...
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we'll spend this much money and we'll factor in that we'll get -4 points from it. I just think that with there being such a lack of cohesion in how all these things are judged, I think that that's almost a safer way to do it, because in the same way that, say, you know, judges have sentencing guidelines, that when they come to, you know, in the courts, they have the parameters at which they are they're doing it. It just creates a little bit more of an opportunity for kind of equality and consistency throughout the process. And I think that might be handy, because certainly from an optics point of view, like, you know, the football fans, I mean, again repeat this again and again, you know, football fans don't want to be looking at finances and you know, courtroom and legal arguments and things like that, but it the way in which this process is unfolding, it is difficult to understand for everyday football fans, and I do have some sympathy for that, because it is difficult to kind of read a structured thread that goes through all of these different cases, and that to me is problematic.
Yeah, it's difficult to understand by leading KCs in the Premier League by the looks
of it. It's difficult to understand for the KCs that are overseeing the process, because they couldn't quite work out.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that they don't even seem to have anybody that could, in the Forrest case, could provide them an explanation as to how the appeal case had got to 6 points for Everton.
Yeah.
If they're not having conversations between themselves, you know, either publicly or in boardrooms or whatever, about how these things are formulated, I struggle to see how the building blocks are in place to kind of for a consensus on these things at this stage now.
It's also getting there a little bit. I mean, going back onto the
formula
collaboration, now collaboration stuff as well, there was, and this is linked to that, isn't it, there was a sort of, there appears to be a cheeky insinuation from Forrest Jordan, the commission, doesn't it, that Everton may have obstructed the commission in the first place to avoid getting punished and going down in 21-22. It was a bit of a strange paragraph, that, but I do get the counter argument to my thoughts that you do need some sort of structure, but I think what I'm saying is some sort of, like, it's just a basis to work with. The one thing that has happened, I think, on these three is the first panel gave 10 points, didn't he? That was it. You got 10 points. The second panel, 6 points with a little bit more of a logic to it. And this one's taken that one step further, where they've actually said 3 points for the entry, whatever you would call it, entry penalty. 3 points because of the scale of your overspend. And then quantifies what the mitigation was, you know. So that's sort of getting to a territory where you can see where it's going towards without necessarily being a rigorous mathematical exercise. which all three commissions appear to have don't appear to want a mathematical exercise. That's why they rejected the Premier League's arguments in the one yesterday, didn't they? So I think we're getting to somewhere where I think that's workable. But I still understand anybody wants to do a counter argument to say, you know, well, if it's 20 million, it's X points. I get that.
But it could be too late by then, though.
It'd be interesting to see what happens. The other one from yesterday, which there was lots of takeouts, wasn't it, from yesterday? There was two or three things relevant to us. One was saying, they said, if you overspend against the threshold isn't very small, you may not get a penalty at all. That was what they said. So we don't know what our penalty is, do we, for this forthcoming commission? Yeah. We're assuming our starting points is 3 to 6 points. Well, based on what they were saying yesterday, if it's a quid, then you may not attract a penalty at all. So that was interesting. On the counter to that, they also said, didn't they, that any commission where there's multiple breaches, i.e. your second or third one in our case, then there should be a greater punishment.
Or major breaches.
Which
could lead to expulsion.
Yeah, well, they said yesterday, didn't they? That was the other thing they said on a major. Weird, like the previous one, and this all supports Joe's point, is that there's no real guidance and stuff, and people looking at it differently. They were saying yesterday is 9 points because it's administration doesn't necessarily have to be the limit. If you have a major breach, we suggest actually you can go beyond the 9 points, and that was incessant. So there's quite a few bits yesterday that I think in their commission that sort of affected us.
Just to kind of step back a little bit, obviously, you know, my argument around the inconsistency of the process, you know, starting the sanctions policy, but you refer to some of it there, you know, it's actually got quite a few layers to it, and this is where I think the inconsistencies go beyond the punishment. The inconsistencies go to how these cases are being prosecuted in the first place. So, and as a result, those inconsistencies to me undermine the process. Part of that is because is this lumping of Everton and Forest into the same category.
Yeah.
So this new panel essentially says there are three categories of breaches: minor, significant, and major.
Yeah.
Now, it seems to have come to the conclusion that Everton, who crossed by £19.5 million, their £105 million limit, falls into the significant category. And that Forest, whose breach was actually 77% higher than Everton's because it was £35 million of a £61 million thing, also lumps into the same category as significant. So it's like, where are the parameters going to start and end for that? You know, what then becomes major, because there's quite a significant difference in the numbers. Obviously, there are different reasons for them, those different mitigating factors. But I find that problematic, because I find the disparity in perhaps suggesting these are similar breaches when I'm not sure. Then there are a couple of others which I think are particularly interesting, in the sense that in the first case for Everton, it was highlighted that Evans' breach wasn't cynical or deliberate. Yes, they found that Evans' breach was largely built on reckless spending on players and wages, which we agree. But it made the point of saying that it didn't think Everton was essentially trying to outrun the problems that it might get down the line. I find it difficult to read the same. I find it difficult to look at the Forest case and see that as something that they weren't doing. Because they spent so much money and they were so aware of their PSR position and the threat that they were in for so long, essentially, they wouldn't have committed their breach if they'd have sold Brennan Johnson within the time frame. Absolutely. And there's a whole argument here. But what they decided to do was sell him after the closure of the window to try and maximise their income. And whilst that might make financial sense, what it was it was a proactive, calculated decision to not comply with the rules.
Also gaining a sporting advantage.
Well, Everton gained a sporting advantage as well. Like, I mean,
that's up for debate.
Well, it's up to debate because they spent so bad.
You always get a sporting advantage.
If we'd have kept hold of Richarlison, then who's to say that he wouldn't have scored the goals to keep us up, like Johnson did for Nottingham Forest?
Well, Johnson only played 3 or 4 games in the next, because he left at the end of the transfer window.
If Charlton
hadn't been sold when he was sold, then Evans' breach would have been £60 million higher, which may well have put them, I mean, I don't know, we don't know where the parameters are, may well have been in the major category then. You know, it goes into it. But anyway, you know, I don't really understand how more isn't made of there being a bit of a cynicism towards Forest breach, because yeah, they clearly decided that non-compliance was the best.
Yeah, they practically admitted that, haven't they?
Exactly. I mean, further to Joe's point is, I can't believe we're on an Everton podcast, so I'm not Notts Forest fan, you know, there's a couple of other takes on this, isn't it? And I think this is both the Everton, I always say this, don't I, times like this, Martin Yol said to his Fulham manager that once you get rid of the veneer of the glitz and the glamour of the riches of the Premier League, it's running it. The whole thing is running in a very amateurish fashion. And, you know, this is what this whole process has shown across, you know, several different levels is that's pretty much the case, isn't it, really? And the one from Forrest, a couple of takeoffs from Forrest is, hey, the board minister appeared to have been limited to do which I thought was just... But the other thing, and just further to Joe's point, is they knew that they were in breach, didn't they, before Christmas 22, didn't they, December? But then spend a load of money.
Carried on spending
players in January 23, knowing full well, we know we breached, but actually...
We worked with the Premier League, didn't we?
Well, they would debate that. But what I'm saying, this goes back to the point compared to... You know where we had adverse comments, carried on spending? Mm. Well, they have carried on spending, and I'm surprised the Premier League never put that in as an aggravating factor.
The only aggravating factor put forward in this was the size of the breach. Now, obviously, there is no breach if Brennan Johnson gets sold, such are the numbers, and with him being an academy project, it would have wiped out. So maybe you could argue that it's wrapped up into that. But it feels, it's very difficult to look at the Forest case and say that isn't the cynical breach that the first panel was suggesting Everton would have been punished more severely for had they been found to have done that.
Yeah.
And again, these are the kind of inconsistencies that go throughout this process, which to me kind of just undermine it, because I don't really understand how that wasn't put forward as more of an aggravating factor in this case. Well, it wasn't put forward as
an aggravating factor. And I find that strange, because from the evidence we know is that Forrest clearly knew that they were in breach before the Christmas was carried on spending.
It was a proactive decision not to comply with the rules.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast.
Given the adverse comments Everton had about such behaviour, and may have about such behaviour in the next commission, why that was not put forward by the Premier League, really, to be honest with you. And that's one of the inconsistencies. It would be you can see why Everton have behaved as they have done about this second commission now, kind of based on what the Forest is we pleaded guilty straight away, didn't we? You know, like we've said, I know there's some caveats to that, isn't there? So we obviously are going, you know, making right what we did properly wrong in the first one is by publicly admitting our guilt. If there is, so if we can't, you know,
so we can expect
a caveat. I'm not sure that the club's publicly admitted it.
No, but I've confirmed it.
PSR numbers are on the limits.
So
it's unclear whether or not it admits guilt because its initial position was that some of those calculations were still up for dispute.
I get that, which were probably based on the original. What we know about the appeal, that probably is not true, is it really? So either way, it's whatever you call it, you know, they've admitted there's a problem anyway, which they may not have done first time round. So that hopefully will be a mitigating factor. Given that the Forest one, you know, that continuing to spend, if the Premier League throw that one at Everton, you know, well, I didn't say it to Forest, possibly. And so there's two, you know, hopefully it's a minimal breach as well. So, and if that's the case, we may not get as bigger fires, what people are saying. So there's two or three bits of positive stuff there, hopefully that apply to us. But yeah, I get the overall general thread. We've had three different commissioners looking at this all in three different ways, haven't we, really? And I get that. I do think this one, you can see sort of end game now where they're getting into the general consensus is that if you get done on this, it's going to be 3 to 9 points. Isn't it really?
Yeah, I mean,
that's a general, or 3 to 8 points, really.
But that's only just coming out now, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's going to take time. So, you know, Joe, you've done this type of stuff away from football. It takes time for case law to develop, doesn't it, really? And I think we're now seeing a sort of thread through these, even though they have been inconsistent across several different areas, where we're now looking at, if you're in front of the, you know, a commission on this and you've gone above your PSR limit, you're talking minimum 3, up to a maximum of 8, depending on, and that will vary depending on the size of the breach, any mitigating factors and any other exceptional circumstances. So we're in that territory, aren't we? And that will develop over time. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. But I do think there's hopefully a couple of positive things we can take from yesterday for our case. But I do see some similarities in how the appeal got their decision and Forrest got their decision yesterday, to be fair.
I mean, obviously we don't know what's going to happen with the Zed case. It's all coming up. But, Joel, the Premier League, you know, the inconsistencies with regards to recommending 12 points and then Evan getting 10, then recommending, was it 8 for Forrest? And then Forrest obviously initially getting 6, but obviously dropping to 4. You've got to... I know you do, but you've got to understand the frustration of every single Everton fan out there. If there was a formula, a structure, whatever way you want to call it, and I know the club signed up to not having this formula, so I just don't think they knew what they were kind of signing up to back then, because it's obviously only just becoming apparent now, the issues surrounding all this PSR, FFP. But you've obviously got to understand the frustration of from Everton fans yesterday.
That's the whole point of what I'm saying, the inconsistencies, not just in how these cases are punished, but how they're prosecuted in the first place, and you know how breaches are interpreted, and the scale of them are interpreted, just all leads to confusion, which just doesn't help anyone. And you know, obviously, you would work on the basis that we're establishing a threat that runs through these, but you know, this commission, in their own writings, made very clear that they're not convinced that a future commission should be bound by the same thought process, which, again, it just leaves everything just open to kind of a bit of chaos, really. It's, and as a result of that, you know, I think the hope was that we might get some clarity from this as to where Everton's might. Second case might fall. Now, we're never going to have an idea until we know the numbers at the heart of the case. So, yeah, that'll come out a little bit, you know, through later. Some of that, or we're getting indication of that when the accounts come out later this month. But really, I don't think we're in any stronger position to know what's going to happen to Everton in the case.
There
are some positives, like you say, but we also know that they're going to be dealing with some negatives as well. Like, trend looks like it's going to be a problem. And obviously, we don't know how much of it's going to be double jeopardy. We don't know how much, you know, we don't know how much merit that argument's going to have. We don't know whether the fact that it's a second breach is going to be, you know, is it substantial mitigation because of double jeopardy, or is it substantial aggravation because it's a second breach? And, you know, like we've just alluded to there, you've got Forrest, who knew they were in danger and carried on spending, and not only carried on spending, but then in the January, but then held on to a player that could solve their problems, you know, well into the depths of the following summer. Yeah, it then becomes kind of hard. You would think it would become harder for the Premier League to have a go at Everton, which has already suggested it's going to do, for spending players to try and remain competitive. So it's an unhappy process, and I'm sure that when the next case comes out, we might be happy with the result. It might, you know, maybe it will fall into whatever constitutes a minor breach, and maybe the next panel will go, well, that doesn't necessarily start at a points deduction, which it sounds like that's open to them according to this one. And we'll be sitting here and thinking, yeah, we're made up. But I've got no doubt that one thing that will happen is that there'll be inconsistencies. It might be inconsistencies that this time favour Everton, but I think there'll be a lack of clarity around the process. I don't think it's particularly fit for purpose. I think it's a lot. It seems to be a long way off getting to a point where that could be the case. And unfortunately, 3 out of the 4 times that these things sit, it'll be Everton that probably lose out due to the probing in the dark that we're doing by trying to kind of create these things on the hoof. Now, look, yeah, we've said it many a time on here before, Everton put themselves in the position that they found themselves in. You know, it's a club that hasn't been run well for a long time, and it knew the rules that it signed up to. So, you know, we're not necessarily saying that the club doesn't, you know, the club's being that hard done by here. But, you know, in terms of looking for some kind of structure and consistency and fairness within this process, I think we're still struggling to find it.
I mean, Everton, what Joe said there, you know, Everton haven't been run appropriately for a good couple of years now. I don't think that's any secret. But, you know, the fans are now being punished for, you know, the backroom team of Everton, whereas Forrest are the one, like, the owner and everyone else associated with Forrest, and, you know, the transfers and everything. They purposely went out there to, you know, break the rules, basically.
What, so in terms of.
Well, everything's going out. So that's what I mean.
They actually go out to break the rules. Yeah. Obviously, a little bit similar to with Everton, they kind of, some of their breach was put down to work on the basis they'd finish higher than they actually did and therefore get more merit payments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, at the end of it, they made a proactive decision with Johnson where it was like, we could sell him now for potentially slightly less money and comply, or we could wait a couple of weeks, get a little bit more money, and but not be compliant, but hope that it's a mitigating factor because we've got more money. But yeah, obviously, they didn't set out to breach from the beginning.
They are two completely different cases, though. Because, I mean, ours is, I mean, let's face it, what we do now is we breached in 21 and we were sort of let off. So, I mean, our problems with the Premier League, you know, I've continued for probably, in terms of consultation with them, probably for 3 years, haven't we? For us is 6 months. And, you know, that's so they are two completely different cases. But ultimately, it's a... Who's punishing the fans? Is it a commissioner or appeal or the owners of the clubs themselves? Well, I'd say it's the owners of the clubs, the ones punishing the fans, just generally speaking, through their behaviour. Okay, a commission may fine a club through a points penalty, but that's fine in the club, isn't it? I think ultimately what this has shown is the behaviour of owners and taking risks. And, you know, Forrest have argued they're similar to us, that to be competitive, you've got to take risks, haven't you? And I totally get that. And in Forrest's case, probably a little bit more mitigation because it was their first season back and so on. And they've got a lower threshold. But that's what we're saying here is it's owners taking calculated risks. But whether our risks should have been budgeting for finishing sixth, I think Forrest said they would have expected 12th, wasn't it, really? You'd argue that's probably a little bit ambitious as well for a club just coming up. And that's what people are being punished for, aren't they?
Do you mean financial risks, though? Is that what you mean?
You're taking the risk that you are going to perform so well that actually, you know, your expenditure can be covered by the rewards, you know, higher league placings, you know, cup runs. That's what you're doing. That's what Machado did, didn't he? If that doesn't happen, you then find yourself in where Everton were, you know, 120 million quid behind the, you know, away from parity. And that's ultimately what you're doing here, and that's what Forrest have done. And fans are being penalised and are not happy because of that sort of behaviour, isn't it? I'd argue it's not a commission or an appeals board that are punishing supporters. It's the risk taken of the owners and how and Machado took massive risks, didn't he?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast.
It's a difficult one with impact on fans because obviously you have to remember the fans of other football clubs as well. Done well. A proper regulatory system should protect the integrity of the entire Premier League and the football structure around it. And fans, as a result, as a whole, should benefit from it. I mean, I don't think the system's been done very well. But obviously, you know, what the Premier League or what the counterpoint would be is, well, what about the 18 other clubs that have complied with the rules and the fans of their clubs that have, you know, not breached the PSR? And so it's, you know, it's a difficult kind of one when you go down that route. But obviously, you know, the clubs are the responsible for keeping their own houses in order. And I think it's clear to say that with both Forest and Everton, they've both failed to do so and are suffering, and their fans are suffering the consequences, but are suffering the consequences of the club's actions, and that's where the problem is. I do have, I mean, with Forrest, you alluded to it there, Gav, I do actually have some sympathy for him with some of this. Like, my kind of position isn't that I think that Forrest should have 4 and Everton should have 6, or that they should be different or any. I don't actually know what they should have got, but I think that the basis on which they're being prosecuted is questionable, and the rules and the interpretation of the regulations is inconsistent, and that's problematic. I think that Forrest actually makes some quite good points in there about, you know, the chasm that exists between the Championship and the Premier League and the disadvantage they essentially have by having to, if you come up and you have to try and spend to try and bridge that competitiveness gap, that gap of competitiveness, but you're still held to the standards of Championship regulations for some of those years, and there is a bit of a disparity there. You know, Forrest came up and hadn't been in the Premier League for 20 years, Now, the Premier League is complicit in the creation of that astonishing gap between the first and the second tier. So, and it essentially goes, when Forest go, well, look, we deserve some mitigation for the lengths that we're going to have to do to try and be competitive in your league. And the panel basically goes, is what it is. Like,
they did
and
walk away.
And I think that's, and I think that's a bit of a dereliction of duty. You know, and I think the Forest make a good point, not only on that front, but also the fact that they were in a more of a disadvantage because of the clubs that came up with them. So they came up through the playoffs, and Bournemouth and Fulham were automatically promoted. Two clubs that both recently been in the Premier League, so their squads still had the remnants of Premier League. So they were better positioned to adapt to Premier League football and be competitive because they still had the remnants of a Premier League squad. But between them, the two clubs got promoted on the foundation of a combined £125 million of parachute payments. Forest didn't have any of them. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, their return and their ability to kind of remain sustainable and remain competitive was also, they came into the league in a far stronger position than Forest did. And I think actually Forest probably deserves some, you know, mitigation for that, or some, you know, Luton could make the same argument for this season. Luton coming up into Premier League is far different to, say, Burnley. He'd only, you know, spent 1 year in the Championship, and yet Luton had been dropped out of the Football League, you know, in relatively recent memory. So, you know, having a system in place where there's a bit more recognition of the challenges of those clubs that are coming up, and those challenges are created by the Premier League, which is moving itself away from the Championship. Yeah, I think the Premier League has to take responsibility for that, and I think it has to be reflected in some of its regulations.
Yeah, can I just pick on your point there? Well, the same argument exists within the Premier League itself, doesn't it? So you've got Everton and Bournemouth, whoever, like, who operate in revenues of £150 to £200 million a year. And say in Everton's case, and you're comparing against the top six who are operating on revenues of whatever it is, 600, 700 million a year. So that there's inequalities everywhere, but I do get the Forest one. The one thing that we should all remind ourselves here is that, you know, if you sat there, looked at the commission, the Everton Commission appeal and the Forest Commission, is you always have to bear in mind, what is the rule? Was it E51 or W50, where it says that the commission can do anything, effectively anything that wants. Mm. So if you sat down those people, we'd be given that because that punishment, because that's what the rule says. And that rule was voted in by the clubs. And they've had an option since 2013, is it? So they've had an opportunity every year to review that rule and haven't. So, you know, there's inconsistency because that's what basically the clubs allowed themselves to in for, didn't they, by allowing such a general rule that applies to them.
But they are getting rid of this rule now because they realise it's not fit for purpose.
Yeah, but we don't... No, I think they're getting rid of the rule because the whole PSR stuff, because they want to align with UEFA, yeah, who do have a more structured way of looking at things. But at the same time, I still think even in that rule, there'll still be inequalities.
Well, we said this on the podcast on Friday, that it would be even more of a closure.
But that's a separate discussion, though, isn't it? About
it is.
Whether it's, you know...
But it still goes back to
Joe's point. Yeah, that actually...
I've got sympathy with Forrest. I've got complete sympathy with Forrest, because I don't think the rules are fit for purpose. And if they've got a rich benefactor who's bought a company, as in a football club, he should be able to do what he wants within it.
Within reason, though. Like, well, I mean, surely there'd be some sort of... Yeah.
I don't think Forrest have ever been, you know, in trouble of going out of business, even before this person, I can't remember the owner's name, but bought the football club. Did they?
So what's the point?
No, I'm just trying to say that if he's bought a football club, as in, i.e. a company, he should be able to spend exactly what he wants on it.
Yeah, but if you want to protect the integrity of the league for the rest of the clubs, and because the logical correlation is that while Newcastle and Man City with their Middle Eastern benefactors can just spend what they want and...
Chelsea did it in 2003-04. Manchester City have done it as well. So we're going back to this conversation that we had on Friday. Football's never been any different. Jack Walker did it with Blackburn. Everton did it in the 60s with the Mersey Millionaires. Football has never been any different. We discussed how many clubs have actually gone out of business, you know, in the history of football, and yet there have been a couple, but I don't think it's because they've overspent, as in on transfers. It's just been a very mismanaged football clubs.
Well, yeah, but I mean, part of that is the pyramid within which it operates, isn't it? Like, I mean, a lot of the clubs are, you know, then, you know, football clubs aren't there to just stay afloat and stay in the same position they are.
Obviously, that's all Everton are going to do now.
If you want to be ambitious, then the gaps are so big that you have to spend more and more before you. Yeah. you know, before you can realise the benefits of that. And are the problems, because the bigger the gaps, the more spending it needs to jump them. And then the more likely it is that clubs get into problems in the first place. Like, I think a system of regulation is absolutely what's needed. But obviously it needs to be a fair one with established principles and rules that can be consistently applied for fairness of the league. Because, don't want to look at a league and just see Newcastle and Man City run away with it. I mean, Man City already are, obviously, but they are, for all their success, and obviously there are certainly question marks over the Premier League's handling that case, but they are under investigation at the moment, and we will see where that leads us. Now, I don't think it's going to lead anyone to a happy position, even if there is retrospective punishment. It still won't wipe out the decade or so we've had of them winning competitions, them beating Everton and other sides and things like that, perhaps with an unfair advantage, but...
The only fair way of doing it for me, it's a completely making it completely fair, is if there was a transfer cap and a wage cap. Mm. Because the likes of we discussed this on Friday, but the likes of United, Liverpool, probably the two biggest clubs in England, if not the world, and they're the ones who can generate the biggest revenue. So now we're going to move to a position where you can spend 80% of your revenue.
Yeah, on wages and transfers, yeah.
Well, say if United... Yeah. Made 500 million in 12 months. Mm. Everton aren't going to make anywhere near what United make in that period. So Everton aren't going to be able to spend as much as Manchester United.
No.
So how is it fair?
Yeah, I'm not arguing the rules are
fair. No, I'm just trying to say Everton at this moment in time,
there is a degree to which they can, because obviously clubs that are in European competition are capped at, I think, 70% of expenditure, yeah. Whereas clubs that aren't in Europe position, so those playing catch-up, can spend 85% under these rules. So there is some opportunity there, but obviously typically it's the clubs with the lower revenue that are the clubs that aren't in Europe, and 85% of their total is less than what 70% of the bigger clubs that are already in Europe is already. But I mean, I think regulation is needed, but obviously we can all have a conversation as to how that's applied. I mean, these are de facto a wage and transfer cap, but the problem is by tying those caps to revenue, you still bake in a system of haves and have-nots where the gaps become very difficult to jog.
Can I just ask a question? The 20 Premier League clubs to vote on whether you should have PSR, like your point. If you ask them tomorrow, what do you think the vote would be?
They probably would pass.
What, pass?
As in, no, they'd have some sort of restriction or finance, like regulation of how much you can spend.
So they'd have basically what they've got at the moment, they vote to keep what they've got at the moment.
That's fine. I'm just expressing my opinion.
And I agree with you. I think there'd be, like City voted against PSR last time. They probably voted against it. Newcastle, I would imagine, would. But most, as owners, you want stability, don't you, as a club? If you know that along as you stay in the Premier League, I guarantee £200 million a year for your business. I'm not going to win anything. I probably want that. I probably wouldn't want a system where actually the supporters would be going to me, listen, stick your hand in your pocket and get them. They've spent £200 million down the road. Their owner's given them that. You put your hand in your pocket and fish up, £200 million to be...
That's very much the American approach, isn't it?
Yeah, and if you're an owner, you don't particularly want that. You want the gravitas that goes with having a Premier League club, but that was actually sticking your hand in your pocket when it's needed. And I think there appears to be a groundswell out there that actually, if they voted for PSR, that all the 14 clubs who are not the big six at all, scrap these, we want to compete. Actually, I don't think that's the case at all. I think most of them would still keep it. There's a couple of clubs at the top you would think would want PSR, wouldn't. And because what's good PSR for City? Well, actually nothing. If they didn't have PSR, they'd just be zillions of pounds a year. So this thing about, PSR, scrap it, gets everybody competitive, I don't think the other 14 clubs look at it like that way.
I think owners
of those clubs think, even when it was, you could spend what you want, and we weren't competitive anyway. I'm not going to win a trophy. But I do like the idea of stability and not having to put my hand in my pocket. And unfortunately, that's the way the thinking was in 2013. And that's the way, if we had the vote in 2024, I think you'd still get like the same as a 14-6, I think it was in 2013. And I still think you get a 14-6, 15-5 now, to be honest with you, in favour of keeping regulations. But I do think your point is is, but do they have to be so clear cut as what they are now? Can you deviate? And that 70-85% split is going towards, hopefully, hopefully to sort of like giving other clubs an opportunity to spend. I mean, if it was up to me, this never going to happen. Is you wanted like to make things a little bit more equal? The Premier League money. Why did the people at the teams at the top get the most money?
Mm.
You know, why give it? Why don't you do it? Reward clubs for being, you know, like who've overachieved. So it's like, so Brighton finish eighth, but actually, if they've really overachieved, why can't they get that reward for their overachievement or something like that? You know, there is scope for that, but that won't be voted through.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast.
I mean, obviously, I'm not saying this is going to be the case, and it's going off on a little bit of a tangent, but you know, in the NFL. A sport that I don't really like at all, but it's you know, if you finish bottom of that league, don't you get the best player in the draft?
Yeah,
the following season. You know, at least there's fairness in a sense in that. Now I know it's a completely different system here, but what I'm saying, if you're going to make it completely fair, you cap how much every single one of the teams can spend, and it should be all the same. But then they're never going to do that.
They don't want that. I mean, and that's this. I think there's people out there who just think the big 14, the smaller 14 don't want PSR. Well, I would imagine 12 out of the 14 do, to be honest with you. And we'll always want that. And that's the problem. Whether that's good for fans or good for competition, I don't know. But do they? I mean, that's the difference between the NFL, you know, is entertainment, isn't it? You know, that's the one, American sports entertainment in this country. In football, slightly different.
Relegation.
And there's no relegation
that's
as well.
This country's no slightly different. Like,
you know, and this is the thing, isn't it? The Premier League, if it went, everybody's got an equal chance of winning, that would not suit anybody in the Premier League or broadcasters at all. They don't want that. They want certainty. They want to sell their product on
well, you've just proved
the big six clash, maybe cheat up with each other and stuff like
that.
You've
just proved there that it's a closed shop then, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because it suits the Premier League but not just the big six, to be honest with you, I would say.
Okay, well, we've got questions and comments coming in. Yeah. Go on, are you going to...
No, it's all right, so I'll see what the questions are.
No, well, before I'm going to finish off with them, but just we'll touch on the Forest appeal. Joe, they got 7 days, is that right, to decide?
Yeah, 7 days to appeal.
So this is probably not true, but seeing speculation on Twitter yesterday that Forest were given a lighter punishment than Everton because there was a deal struck to suggest that they wouldn't appeal and that the hearing wouldn't be heard after the Premier League season.
They were given a lighter punishment because they cooperated. They were deemed exceptionally cooperated with the Premier League. So it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because they've done that and then they've come out and released a statement after they go with the process and questioning it. So
yeah. Maybe that's part of the subterfuge.
So, you know, I think they'll have to think about it carefully because. I haven't delved too deep into this, but I think the Times have just written a story that says that if they were to appeal, there was the potential for the punishment to also go up as well as down.
Okay, was that the case with us?
Well, I mean, it'll be the same for everybody. I haven't looked into that properly yet, but I would suspect that Forest, if it's not a free hit to appeal, then it may just be better off going, you know what, we got 4 points. There's multiple readings of that which suggest that they might have been quite fortunate to have done so. They're only 1 point off safety in Luton. If they can't beat Luton in a foot race from a 1 point, you know, disadvantage with the squad that they've got, then probably don't deserve to be in the Premier League anyway. They'll be looking at what Everton come, Everton's points deduction down the line and that as well. But yeah, like it'd be difficult to see. If I'm honest, I find it difficult. Whilst I have some sympathy for Forrest's position, some of Forrest's arguments, I find it difficult to see how the process could have been any more lenient towards them. I still think that the interpretation is that some of their actions and not treating them as aggravating factors, mainly the Brennan Johnson one, just really kind of sticks out to me as something that doesn't seem particularly consistent with how Everton have been treated. And also this idea that their breach and the scale of it falls into the same category as his Everton's, despite being 77% higher, also kind of just like I mean I'm not saying that could be interpreted differently at an appeals board, but like I struggle to see the consistency. So
I mean, Gav, the integrity of the Premier League is, you know, was going to be thrown out the window if it hasn't already. If Forest do appeal, which, you know, that process, that hearing, any decision's not going to be until after the season's finished,
that's
then that's
the
just a nightmare,
isn't it? You know, that's what they signed up for, ultimately. You know, it's in the Appendix 1 or whatever it is, the Premier League handbook, isn't it? These are the additional rules that we put in, agreed by the clubs. But yeah, it does make it also farce. It'll be just that nightmare if Forest and Everton third and fourth from bottom, isn't it? And it's also Forest ahead by 1 point, and their appeal, you know, they stay the same, then our appeal, we get 2 points back and we go ahead by Forest by 1 point, sends them down. That's ultimately, you know, as much as we laugh about it, they go, yeah, but that in theory could still happen, and that's when it becomes. That's when about, like, you know, the farce that we've got at the moment becomes even more farcical. But it was voted for by the clubs, this, and we should all remember that. And it's a mess, really, if the club's making, really. I think the Premier League could have given a bit of a stronger steer over some of the eventualities, and now it could be embarrassing for the competition.
Okay, well, we'll finish off on questions, because I'm going to be honest, I'm sick to death of talking about point deductions. I'd rather, obviously, we just talk about football. But there's a funny one for you, Gav. Two-wheel Lucas, he is a regular contributor. Lucas. I'm puzzled. The title says farce, exposed, and yet Gav has spent the time justifying the Premier League.
I'm not justifying the Premier League. Well, I'm justifying the Premier League because I'm saying that it's the clubs who voted for, not the Premier League, for a start. That people say, well, the Premier, blah, 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 but it's not. The rules are, you know, that this rule, that what we're going through now was basically what the clubs didn't want, is like that massive delay you had between Everton breaching in 22 and then only getting their commission happening 18 months later. So they wanted to bring everything forward 12 months, so we had a more timely punishment. So I'm not defending the Premier League. What I'm saying is people firing at the Premier League, you're shooting at the wrong target. You should be shooting at the clubs. That's what they wanted. The Premier League are just facilitating that. And I've said, to be fair, I have criticised the Premier League's approach to the commission with Everton and the commission with Forest, telling two completely different stories.
And inconsistencies and recommendations for point deductions as well.
Absolutely, and not aggravating factor for Forest spending in January when 23, when they knew they were breaching PSR before the transfer window, having made adverse comments about Everton's behaviour. So I defend myself there.
But just on Everton's behaviour, though.
I'll put on the phone to Richard later when I get off this.
No, that's fine. Just on Everton's behaviour, though, is that in reference to them denying it?
No, continuing to spend. We got criticised for continuing to spend when they'd been warned. But the Premier, I know it's slightly different with Forest, but Forest knew that they were breaching PSR before the January transfer window in 23, but carried on spending. And the Premier League have seen fit not to comment on that, and I find that strange.
Okay, Joe Simon C on YouTube. The Premier League isn't fit for purpose. How can a team spend more money and have a sporting advantage with players than get a lesser punishment? Absolutely shocking.
I mean, I haven't got a sporting advantage for their breach as well. They just didn't make use of it because they spent the money so poorly. You know, I think that is one of the few things that has been established through this, and it's not one that I disagree with. At the end of the day, you know, both of these breaches stem from reckless spending on football players, and if that's not an intent to try and get sporting advantage, then I don't know what is. Whether you realise that, it's how you spend the money. But I do have sympathy with the position of, you know, as I think we've spoken quite a bit on here, you know, the putting Everton's, the scale of Everton's breach and the scale of Forest breach in the same category. I'm really interested to see what the parameters for the significant category are, because yeah, there's quite a lot of disparity there in terms of the percentage by which both clubs have gone over what their limits were. So to suggest that they fall into the same kind of category just doesn't necessarily strike me as troubling, but I would like to see, you know, what the kind of logical follow-on from that is, and what's deemed to be a minor breach and what's deemed to be a major breach.
Okay, Gav Michael Polly on Facebook says, an independent regulator can't come in quick enough. We've been talking about that a little bit, just waiting before we came on.
Yeah, I mean, but I think people think the independent regulator will just come in and just say, oh, Premier League done that wrong, that commission's wrong, and, you know, and criticise. criticise and, you know, sanction people, but that's not what the regulator's role in is. If you read the white paper is quite clear. Albeit it might have changed, you know, before today, was the regulator's role was just to be oversee the process, and it's still leaving the Premier League to sort out its own PSR, you know, regulations and provide sanctions. It's leaving that to the Premier League. Indeed, if you look at the white paper, what it says is, you know, they can do their own financial investigations on clubs, you know, as part of maybe like Everton now getting a new owner, you know, that type of stuff. And what the white paper says is, if a club is in PSR difficulties and sanctions being looked at, any information that the regulator's got about that club's financial performance, they will give that to the Premier League to look at. So it won't be, you know, hindering or criticising the Premier League on PSR stuff. That there's an opportunity for it to actually help bring in sanctions. So the regulator's got a wider range of stuff apart from just finance as well. But I think there's a feeling here that a regulator will look at all this, what's being done at the moment, and think, oh, that's a load of rubbish, do something differently, or that's wrong, you know. That should be that, you know, where you said 6 points there, we think it's two. That's not what their role is. In this aspect of it, it's quite clear that the PSR stuff will still be in the domain of the Premier League. But that doesn't disguise the fact that regulation is quite clearly needed, isn't it, really? And conversations needed to be had, maybe off the record. Without a shadow of a doubt, you know, maybe some guidance on, you know, like this type of stuff, isn't it really? You know, is it really a good idea to have two commissions in the same season? You know, that type of thing, you know, to give guidance and support there without actually telling people what they've got to do. And I think that's what I see the role of regulators to be a guiding hand in this type of stuff, not actually handing out the punishments, because that's not what their role is.
Okay, last one then, Joe. Emma, EFC regular commenter. Just talking about like Mshiri and Usmanov, and are we expecting any of that as mitigation in Everton's favour for this second hearing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was a big part of the first hearing, but that all got thrown out.
Yeah.
I think the difference for the second hearing is it'll be the first time that Everton can point to the accounts and evidence losing out because of what was a proactive decision that I think we all believe was morally correct to suspend its ties with Russian-based sponsors. So in the first case, it was this was an argument that centred around deals that hadn't yet been done by Everton. So basically, Everton were arguing that, you know, the stadium naming rights deal, which would have seen it get £10 million a year for 20 years for the new stadium to be sponsored by USM, they argued that there were plans to bring that into place and bring in forward before the stadium was actually completed, and therefore Everton would have started to realise some of that money from an earlier start. Now, there were several problems with this. One, the fact that there was no documentary evidence that the club could provide to say that this was the case, and two, the fact that even at its best, that would have only have helped the club by £10 million a year, so that there still would have been a breach, because obviously the breach is 19.5. Now, that argument will move forward into this set of accounts, because they'll be able to say, well, look, all that money that they did have previously for, you know, kits and training ground and things like that, sponsorship money they were already getting from USM that they had been getting in previous years, that's taken out of the account, so that will contribute to the losses. And this time they'll be able to say, well, look, you can see the documentary evidence here of the impact of a decision that was made off the back of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. It'd be very interesting to see how the Premier League interpret it. Obviously, yeah, they haven't been particularly conciliatory towards Everton's position on these matters so far, but I would find it very interesting to see if that wasn't some degree of mitigation or hadn't had some merit for Everton this time around, because the alternative is the only logical kind of alternative if Everton get no credit for it would be to say that the Premier League would have had no problem with Everton continuing its ties with Russian businesses after the invasion, which would be a strange position, I think, for us to fall into.
Yeah, good point. Were you going to comment on that?
No, I think as well, they couldn't actually cancel the contract either, could they?
I think it was not as if they could get
rid of that contract and get somebody else in. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that plays out, but our hand in this commission is far stronger with regard to that. Yeah. The moderators and the last commission, when it was, let's face it, a bit flaky.
Yeah. Okay, well, I've had enough, to be honest. I've had enough. We haven't even got a game, have we, for still over to, well...
It's called content, Ian.
It's called content, but yeah. Look at all these notes about FFP. PSR, I don't care. I just want to talk about football and get Everton back.
As Roy Keane would say, you're just doing your job, you know. And this is the part of everybody's job, isn't it, at the moment, isn't it, really, all this type of stuff?
It is.
Being interested in forest spending patterns and things like that.
Well, we will continue to
Great.
Bring the content to you. Anything else to say, Joe? Have you got anything planned for the Echo website for the next afternoon, tomorrow?
I went down to the stadium yesterday.
You did?
I went out to the stadium.
Very jealous.
Yeah, very privileged, very fortunate. It looks amazing.
Wow.
So you can expect some content around that. And then I've got a few days off work after that, which I'm sure will be very, very busy. And, we'll probably end up with me jumping back on because I imagine there may well be further developments in the life and times of a football club in that period, so before the next kicker ball. So
Joe's going to be in the doghouse with the missus. If he has to jump back on and start working, which you shouldn't do, it's your holiday. Just enjoy it. Switch off. Chris Beasley will be back. Gav will be here to do the podcasts. I'll be here.
Is that a good thing? I don't know,
It's not.
Absolutely.
No worries. Gav, anything else to say before we...
No, I thought it was very interesting discussion as ever. I think really balanced and let's face it, stuff that you didn't expect to be discussing. At any point, is it really?
No, absolutely. And you can see, obviously the frustration is there to see in the comments. And thank you for everyone who's submitting the comments and the opinions. That's all for today's show. Please remember to hit the like and subscribe button for the Royal Blue YouTube channel. Follow us on Facebook, which is Everton FC Liverpool Echo. I've been Ian Kroll, joined by Joe Thomas and Gav Buckland. And this has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.